coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast. We're recapping week two in Las Vegas at picturesque Shadow Creek, where we had a first-time winner, a little bit of drama, plus a lot of random golf stories, some golf attire debate that is absolutely ridiculous. We have an old man golf rivalry brewing and pop politics on the dueling town halls and everything we're tuned into outside of sports. Plus, this week's guest, we're going very food-centric in the second half of our episode, and it begins with an awesome conversation with Brandy Molloy. You know her from Judging on the Food Network. She's on the Today Show, Hallmark Channel, and much more. We're going to get you into the holiday spirit. Really fun conversation on all things food. And last but not least, we're breaking down Halloween candy across the country when we hashtag always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at FlightScope. Mike, how about our friends at FlightScope? We want to thank everyone out there who's bought in the Mevo unit, and there's going to be many more to come, it seems like. This is a tool used by Bryson, the best golfers in the world. Bubba Watson uses it, and amateur golfers all over the world use it because it's really easy. It fits in your pocket. I sent you the pictures of how small it is. It's a nice
pocket unit.
It's very tiny, fits easily on the go, travel or not. I took it to Florida, and I got my data there, got my yardages locked in before I went and played and shot a 79 with my mom's clubs. So if I can do it and if I can get the right yardages out there, then you can too, for sure. Our promo code to get the FlightScope Mevo is COL10 for 10% off. Again, COL10 for 10% off with FlightScope Golf.
And welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Grivet Golf. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, like you said, it was week two in Vegas at Shadow Creek, the highly engineered course.
Yes,
to look
highly
as
decorated.
Perfect as possible. That we, of course, remember from the Tiger Phil match a year ago. This feels like so long ago. It was a loaded leaderboard, but a guy that hasn't won yet did pull it out over all the firepower out there.
Shout out to Jason Kokrak. I know you see my picks on Twitter weekly at Course of Life One. And whenever I pick Kokrak, I just type in soda and then we have the little bottle of soda that comes up. So that's like my little unofficial icon for him. I didn't have him this past week, but shout out to Jason. He's a great ball striker that's been on tour for a while. The names lingered on leaderboards, but he finally got it done. A final round 64, Mike. That's how you get it done on a really tough and at times treacherous Shadow Creek course there in Las Vegas.
Yeah, there's that one particular par three that's like 150 yards or something, but you can't miss short or long or right or left.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of small, tight greens, and it's in immaculate condition. So mistakes get doubly exposed on a course like that with a surprising amount of rolling hills and slight elevation changes and side hill lies for our seemingly flat Las Vegas desert area. It was a really cool venue. Started off the week with a Dustin Johnson positive test in the coronavirus. We ended the week with a Jason Day injury where he was in the top 10 and had to pull out because of, yes, of course, neck pain. That he is just, that guy's just riddled with injuries. But nonetheless, Kokrak gets the win and a solid performance from him when he had to on Sunday.
So surprisingly, only two COVID positives, right, during the 2 weeks in Vegas.
Yeah, Finau and Dustin Johnson. I was praying that the guys would take care of themselves and be smart out there. For the most part, it sounds like they were. So shout out to the guys on the tour. They're still after it and keeping the safety in mind. I like it.
And then we got another big announcement, and that is that fans will be back on the golf course the week before the Masters in Houston. What do you think of this?
Yeah, so this is just kind of a little drop in the water here. Just putting our feet in right now. Nothing too crazy. They're forecasting 2,000 fans total that are going to be tickets sold daily for the Houston Open coming before the Masters. And also the tournament they're playing on Bermuda is just going to be attended by quite literally local people on the island and always has kind of some of the smaller galleries on the PGA Tour in general. So these are good opportunities just to kind of test things out and see if we can just responsibly have crowds of golf fans distance when they need to. We've seen it even in moments like the PGA Championship. There's going to be culminations around the 18th green where things might get a little bit crowded. But for the most part, on a golf course, if you're stretching that many people across 18 holes, it can be done. And this is just the slow reintroduction of getting fans back on the course.
Yeah, you know, the question to me is how they're going to police everything that needs to happen on the golf course. Are they going to have a lot of volunteers that are there? They're going to be trying to keep them wearing masks and keep them separated from each other. And I don't know if it's going to happen.
It's going to take volunteers, like you said. So they're going to have a few more probably on hand than they would have the past 4 or 5 months. There is going to be a little bit of policing there. Again, you can only do so much. We saw what we saw in Missouri a few weeks ago, but hopefully it all goes well. One thing that it did end up happening on the PGA Tour schedule, they actually canceled the Hero World Challenge in Bahamas, the tournament that Tiger typically hosts at the end of the year in December there. Logistically, I think there's some travel issues with the Bahamas specifically as well, too, that are preventing that from being happen. So they scratched that event, and that's one less on the fall schedule.
Let's talk about something else that we talked about last week. We talked about golf attire. We, of course, talked about the hoodie. That sparked a huge amount of controversy over in the European Tour. And then shortly after we recorded last week's episode and it came out, there was the issue of socks out in New South Wales.
Yes, New South Wales, Mike. Australian pro Ewan Porter went to New South Wales. Mike, you know, my pal Garrett, me and him went on a trip that he won for work to Australia and we played New South Wales. So I'm in a real quandary here, but unfortunately, due to my position on this story, I am disavowing New South Wales right here on this podcast. It was one of the most beautiful golf courses I've ever played in my entire life. But this policy of forcing even a professional golfer like Ewan Porter to absolutely wear matching sock and shoe colors on the golf course just to be permitted to play is just another absolutely ridiculously archaic measure being taken by this club. It really shocked me to see.
Yeah, it's really just wrong in every aspect. This whole, like, put our nose up in the air and, oh, you can only play if you have matching shoes and socks. It's just bullshit. It's bullshit.
Come on. You know, like, you've seen the world's best golfers mismatch shoes and socks all the time, and there's absolutely no beef with it. Ewan Porter is a former professional golfer that understands how to appropriately dress when he's playing around.
And is an active member of the Australian PGA and does charity work and works with kids and is a broadcaster down there as well. And they kicked him off the course. They banned him from the course, right? Yes, they fined him and then they recorded him to the Australian PGA.
Once he posted the video on Twitter, kind of giving his reaction to the situation, then they took the measure to ban him, which is absolutely ridiculous. Like we said, listen, it is not about how you could, there's a certain very, very low level of decorum in terms of what you wear on the golf course. We have very low standards for what that is. It is about how you conduct yourself and behave and treat the course and treat the people that you're playing with. That is the important part of the game of golf and not what you're wearing.
Yeah, it's so I'm not playing there either anymore. Let's just put it that way.
Yes, we have. Unfortunately, it's only an 18-hour flight away, but I'm going to have to disavow New South Wales and I will not be back on my next trip to Sydney if that ever happens.
If that ever happens, if we're ever allowed to leave our homes ever again. Let's talk about the other interesting thing that happened this past weekend, and that was the Champions Tour with Phil Mickelson and Mike Weir. Yes. Who thought we'd be saying that name on this podcast? The lefty from Canada, who I loved watching him play back in the day on the regular tour.
Remember he won that Masters as well, too? Mike Weir, two lefty Masters winners right there, in addition to Bubba Watson, a few of them there.
Yep, and so Mike Weir and Phil Mickelson were playing together for the Sunday final round, and Phil stuck it out with a 65. He's still got it. If he's on the Champion Tour, he's still got it.
Two wins for Phil now, and he caught my boy Jim Furyk, who's also got two quick wins since turning 50 this year. We got a rivalry.
It's going to be a great rivalry. But you know what I thought was funny? Did you see any of Phil's press conference after he won?
I saw a couple quotes, but tell me what your highlight was.
Funny thing was he was saying how much he loved playing on the Champions Tour and how he kind of liked all the guys out there and kind of how they made the course so that they really took care of the details, but they weren't trying to kill the players. And I guess on Saturday they had to play 36 holes and they were using golf carts. So he said he didn't walk off the course exhausted.
Oh, yeah. Love that. Phil, by the way, you'll appreciate the stat. He finished last in driving accuracy, first in driving distance, first in birdies, and won the tournament. That's just typical Phil right there.
Typical Phil. Typical Phil. I mean, the question is whether he can leverage all of this into actually contending and winning in a month of the Masters, because that's why he's playing on the Champions Tour right now, is because he feels he can get a better warm up for the Masters than playing on the tour.
Yeah.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I mean, I would love it to. We're running out of time on Phil right now in major championships. Yeah. The clock is ticking faster for him than maybe a lot of other guys on tour right now. But shout out to him for getting that second W.
So here's a question for you. Because I remember we used to talk about this, like we thought Tiger at some point was just going to drop the bag and just walk away from the game. That would be like typical Tiger thing to do. Yeah. Do you think, though, with him seeing Phil and Furyk out there just owning the Champions Tour, that Tiger is going to, you know, go there when he turns 50?
Yeah, I know. That would have been such an unheard of thing to say in like the last 10, 15, 20 years. But now that doesn't sound too crazy. Him going to maybe play, you know, just majors, just senior majors. You know what I mean? If the senior British Open is at St. Andrews or something like that, how would he pass that up in a future year? So sounded crazy on the surface a while back, but I think it's more realistic as the days go by.
Let's talk about a celebrity match.
Yes, they just announced it. The next match upcoming. Speaking of Shadow Creek, speaking of Phil, Phil's back again for the next match, and an interesting group that he is with now. We're not going to quite get the level of golf that we've gotten in the last couple matches, I don't think. It is going to be Phil and Charles Barkley, who is renowned as having an ugly swing and horrible golf game, against Stephen Curry and Peyton Manning, a very interesting foursome that we're going to see for the next match.
If Phil's team doesn't, I mean, I guess the trade-off here is that Phil is the pro, but he's playing with Barkley, so it's going to even out when you put, yeah. So
this is essentially one on two, except for like a couple par threes when Barkley might be able to hit the green. That's what's going on.
Let's keep in mind that Peyton Manning was awfully good during the match.
He was. Better than Tom Brady outside of that one hole out wedge.
Well, you know, Tom Brady would have done better if he hadn't ripped his pants on that hole out.
Yes. We'll get to Tom Brady a little later on the podcast, but let's get to, before we talk next week, I do want to shout you out because you had a very impressive scorecard dipping into double digits and way below 100, which is kind of usually your marker for 18, but tell everyone what you shot out there last week.
Yeah. So I played on a Thursday last week the goal going into the round was just break 100.
Yeah.
And I somehow hit 45 on the front. And it was one of those 45s where it didn't feel like a 45 because I didn't feel like I was playing that great.
The card you posted on social media, just no explosions. That's the key there.
There was like 1-8 maybe on the back somewhere.
Yeah. So just trying to steer it home, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Ended up shooting a 93, which for me, lowest round I've had in years. So I'm very happy about that. So I'm done. Clubs are packed up. I'm done for the year. That's it.
Oh, you're going. You know when you're peaking. George Costanza, right? Just leave on a good joke and you're out.
Walk away. Exactly.
Yeah, there's nothing else to see there. Congratulations on the sub 100 round there.
Let's move into next week's event, which is the Zozo
Tiger.
Not in Japan this year.
No, it's not. Tiger does defend, though, quite technically.
Yes.
And so this course, we've seen a lot back in the day. You remember now the Hero World Challenge got canceled. That was kind of the Tiger year-ender that he does in the Bahamas. Back in the day, there was a small 16-man. It changed a bunch of names, but it was played at Sherwood in California. Tiger Woods had some epic wins there. There was a Zach Johnson-Tiger Woods playoff back in the day that a lot of people might remember. So they're back at this course. They haven't had it in the PGA Tour rotation for a while, so I don't know, Tiger, Sherwood, Masters prep. Is this good vibes to pick him this week? You'll have to check out Twitter. I'm at Course of Life 1 for my full card, but I'm considering it this week. It could be Tiger.
I know you won't put Tiger out as your podcast exclusive pick, but who is your podcast exclusive pick?
Yeah, I did do a quick run through. I'm looking at maybe Matthew Fitzpatrick. Could be a good pick. Played sneaky good this past week. At Shadow Creek, enjoyed his time there. Sherwood is not an overly long course. They're playing in good California air, good conditions to score. So I'm going to go with Fitzpatrick, a guy who I didn't have last week. Sneaky top 10 or 15 finish. So he'll be on my card for sure.
We will see what happens. In the meantime, let's move on over to Tuned In, where we share what we're looking at outside of the world of sports. And for me, because it finally came out the brand new supermarket sweep.
Yes, let's get into the food, right? It's time. This is a big food episode. So supermarket sweep, people remember as a great, what was that, maybe late 80s and 90s?
Late 80s, early 90s, yep.
Classic carts running through the aisles, the mad mm-hmm. dash for as much cash as possible into your shopping cart. You win prizes with inflatables. It's just a mad race around the store, bonuses everywhere. And it was quite a fun ride. I saw a little of the premiere.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same idea. There's a little difference in the final sweep, of course, and that is that instead of you just trying to get your three clues so you can win, I think what was originally $10,000 in the original supermarket sweep, now you can play for up to $100,000. And that's if you get the three clues, you win $25,000, then you can mm-hmm. keep playing to win $50,000, then you can keep playing to win $100,000. So a little more drama built in there. And looks like they're doing an hour format. So you get two separate supermarket sweeps bundled into one episode. So.
I love what people go for when they're trying to fill their cart, like with surprisingly like high budget items that are nice and small. Yeah. Like you got to get like the macadamia nuts and then but then you can get the diapers, but they take up a lot of cart room. So there's kind of that give and take about how you fill your cart to get the most money in there.
Yep. Exactly. So it wasn't maybe quite as good as the original, but I think I'll keep watching. I'll keep going.
I'll go ahead and talk about another ABC show that I know for sure that you are not tuned into. However, I'll give everyone the rundown and the hot take they need. Mike, how excited are you that The Bachelorette is back? Isn't this just great for you? I know you're jumping out of your chair right now.
I'm so excited that I'm not even going to turn it on.
Well, let me tell you, you will appreciate the plot twist that's happening this season because obviously it's 2020 now and we can't keep anything a secret. So sadly, the internet does spoil a certain amount of what happens on each upcoming season. Mm-hmm. You kind of know what's going to happen. 39-year-old Claire, the oldest bachelorette in the history of the show, actually is just about to run off with a guy. She's going to throw the process to the wind of whittling down these 30 guys in the house. She has picked a guy immediately named Dale that she's just going to run off with. And I actually think they're going to have to like bring in a replacement bachelorette. There's talks of who that might be, but she has just completely thrown out the format of the show. What are your thoughts on that?
I appreciate her independence.
I mean, it's a bold move. No one's ever just said, F the show. I found my match on day one. Like she literally, the guy got out of the limo. And once he left and walked in the house, she turned with a mic on her dress and she said, I think I just met my husband. So like, she's like really on this love at first sight thing. So we'll see how the rest of the season goes down.
I give the wedding 2 days.
Yeah.
I give the marriage 2 days.
Yeah. My hot take is the over under, unfortunately, is 13 and a half months. The average bachelor relationship probably lasts between 9 and 12. I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt since she thinks it's love at first sight, but we'll see what the future holds for Claire this season.
Yeah. I'm not looking forward to it. You know what else I'm not looking forward to as we move into pop politics is the final debate of, debate two of what was supposed to be three, but is now two, because this past week, of course, we had the dueling town halls after the debate was canceled, after Trump refused to take part in a virtual debate because of his positive COVID test. So they had dueling town halls. We learned absolutely nothing that we didn't already know from the two candidates. Nothing.
I was like, did we learn anything new? Absolutely not. People who want to vote left or are watching left, the people who want to vote right are watching right, or people who just don't care, just tuning in for the entertainment at this point. It was very interesting to see Jim Carrey play Joe Biden, though. I think he's doing a good job with that impression. I love the way he shoots the guns off and he rocks the Ray-Bans, pretty much the aviators as well as Joe Biden does. Mm-hmm. So I'm appreciating the SNL spoofs to start off the cold opens and Saturday nights right now. I will say a little inside information. My wife actually had a work call with Susan Page, who you remember moderated the vice presidential debate.
Yes.
Between Pence and Kamala Harris. So we got a little reaction behind the scenes here from Susan. She said that apparently Saturday Night Live went out of the way to contact her and ask her where she got the specific jacket she wore on the night of the debate so they could get the exact same one. So SNL leaves no stones unturned with those impressions, just so everybody
knows. That's why they're the only late night sketch comedy show on Saturday nights.
Yeah, they're covering all the bases there. So shout out to SNL. If there's like, I'm not a big SNL person in general. I really just watch the beginning, the weekend update, and whoever the musical guest is if I'm interested. But if there's ever a time to tune in, these next few weeks are definitely worth it.
Definitely. Let's move on to this week's guest. And let's start, before we even say who it is, let's just remind everyone that it is October. It's the middle of October. It is officially the holiday season.
I love that. I love it when you say those words, Mike. It's beautiful the way those roll off your tongue. It's absolutely the holiday season. And we covered this in depth, all the holidays, Halloween, Christmas, Thanksgiving, traveling with kids and everything in between. Brandi Molloy, like I said at the top, she's Judge Chop Jr., had shows on the Cooking Channel, a food, lifestyle, and parenting expert. You've seen her on the Today Show as well, too. We'll pull some clips on our social media of her there. Just tons of holiday cooking tips. If you're a parent, you need to listen to this interview as well. Some really good tips for getting your kids involved in the kitchen. We could all use a little help there, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just here for the food tips because, you know.
Oh, there's lots. Yes. This is a tune in for you for sure.
I can't wait. But first, before we get into it, we want to remind you that this conversation is brought to you by our friends at Groovit Golf, makers of the sold out Groovit Golf Brush. It's sold out and in such high demand because it does what the average golf brush cannot. The average brush has you searching for a source of water on the course, and there is none out there right now. It's even hard sometimes to find a trash can. Yeah. The Groovit has a built-in pump that sprays water or cleaning solution right on the club face, allowing for a quick and efficient scrub on the course. And while your average golf brush is stuck to your bag, the Groovit brush has detachable magnets, which make it easier to use. Plus, the brush comes with a 3-year bristle guarantee. If you can wear out the brush head cleaning golf clubs in 3 years, send it back and Groovit will go send you a free replacement. Now, that is incredible reliability. So prepare to be amazed with the consistency and control the clean grooves will give you. Using your existing golf clubs with the Groovit, you'll get the spin, trajectory, and consistency you're looking for. So head on over to their website, grooveitbrush.com. Go ahead and sign up on their mailing list so you can get notified as soon as it's back in stock so that you can get your Groovit brush. Again, that's grooveitbrush.com.
Next up, we have a TV host and food, lifestyle, and parenting expert. She co-hosts the Momhood podcast, and you've definitely seen her on the Today Show or as a Food Network judge as well. We have Brandi Molloy joining the Course of Life. Brandi, thanks for hopping on today. How you doing?
I am thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Definitely. Been following yourself and your family for a while, and it's great to connect you to us and our Course of Life audience. I want to start first with your background, though, because it's very interesting. You actually grew up in a military family and talk a little bit about how that maybe shaped your love for different types of cultures and cuisines and how that plays into the brand and the living you make for yourself today.
Sure. I mean, what a treat to be a military dependent. You know, I'm so grateful that we got to travel all over the world. My dad served in the Army for close to 40 years.
Wow.
So we lived all over. One of my favorite places was Germany. And being there, we got to explore all of Europe. And so to immerse our entire family in these cultures and learn about different cuisines is so such a gift, really. And I think that my love for food really started as a little girl, being able to experience these different foods. And it's such a great connector. I mean, just the best. And even living on a military base my whole life, you're just around super diverse people and there's always potlucks. And I always give this example, you know, when I was growing up, it was really about like whose parent is deployed or whose parent is serving overseas. And so when they would come back, all of us would bring our favorite dishes, you know, even to the tarmac. And then we would all have a potluck right there.
Nice.
We would go to the person's house. We would take turns dropping off dishes. And so you really get to try all sorts of different foods. And I mean, I've had some of the best foods all over the world, you know, just from simple potlucks.
Nice. I've never heard the term tarmac potluck until today. That's great. I love that. Very cool background indeed. And where I originally found you and started following you is from content that you did with Pop Sugar. That's a great website where you can get all sorts of handy tricks and tips and whatnot. And you made some great content for them. Talk to me most about what you loved about your time there and that team as well.
Yeah, you know, I'm so grateful because being at Pop Sugar, I was there close to 7 years, and myself and my producer at the time, Nicole Azuka, created a show called Eat the Trend. And we basically recreated food trends that you see all over social media using accessible ingredients, relatable recipes. And it took off and it did so well that we were able to sell a version of that show to Food Network. And so it became a special on the Cooking Channel. And every every day I said, you know, I have the best job in the world because I'm getting to eat food, learn about these food trends, the history of them, talk about food. And, you know, my palate is so wild. Like, I love, you know, funky, different, weird food. So to be able to make that into a job and to really be like the messenger behind these recipes and these food trends was so cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, we love talking about weird food on the Course of Life, definitely. So that fits right into our audience. And it's true. Every time you see a Brandy Molloy segment, you know it's going to make you say, oh, wow, that's not that hard. I think I can do that at home. So I appreciate that.
Oh, that's awesome.
As an amateur myself. And some of the other places where we've seen you, I mentioned it at the top, but we have to talk about Studio 1A and the Today Show kitchen. You know, I wake up with Savannah and Hoda every single morning, like millions of other Americans do. Just talk about the time that you've got to spend there with that cast and the dishes you've been able to make. It looks like you just have a ball every time you go there.
I mean, what a dream. Like, the first time I was asked to be on the Today Show, I had no idea that I would ever be there again, you know? So my mom flew out with me and I recreated these ramen crusted sticky wings and I had a blast. And then they asked me to come back and I just kept pinching myself. And every time I go there, it feels so surreal. I mean, every single person on that crew, from talent to the producers, are just so solid and so great at their job, and they love what they do. And to be able to be on a TV screen that I watch, just like a lot of us listening, you know, since I was a little kid, is amazing. We have so much fun. Al Roker has got to be one of the most down-to-earth human beings ever. And you feel like family every time you're there. And so I'm grateful anytime I get asked to be back.
It's very reassuring to hear. And on your YouTube, you've covered some of your trips there as well too. And you can see even off camera how nice everyone is there. You had a great segment back in the day that's up on YouTube as well, where you made some recipes out of leftover Halloween candy with Al Roker dressed as Steve Urkel. Which was an all-timer if people haven't seen that. I'm hoping there's maybe some sort of holiday season planned upcoming in the next couple months. Do we know anything official yet, or are we still waiting on word?
Not yet, but the thing that, you know, this year has taught everyone is that it's so easy to just hop on Zoom or, you know, jump on some type of video conference and be on live television. So you never know what will happen. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I have some fun ideas that I've pitched, so we'll see.
Oh man, we might go right into your kitchen directly then and just skip the travel altogether. I love it. Awesome. And then we've had some other great Food Network personalities on the podcast as well too. People know you from judging on Chopped Junior, but also, since we are in the holiday spirit, we have to talk about the Christmas cookie challenge. Myself and my wife just absolutely love watching all these baking challenges on the Food Network. What's your favorite part of being on that show? And is it ever too early to get the Christmas cookies going? I think the answer is no, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, why not celebrate Christmas all year long, especially this year?
Yes.
But one of the best parts of that show is just eating everything. I am not lying when I tell you, like, every single cookie just blows your mind. You're like, how the hell did they get these flavors together to make them so interesting and different? And not only do they taste delicious, but they look so good. So what was funny is when we shot last season, I would take the cookie that I'd taken a bite of, or the one that was a beauty on the plate that we were judging, and I'd be like, oh, I know you guys are probably going to get rid of those because I already got my cooties on them, but you can just put them in my trailer and I will totally take them home with me. And so every morning before I went to set, I was eating like the day's leftover cookies from the night before.
Thank you for answering that. Thank you for answering that question of what happens to all the leftover baked goods on those shows. Now I know.
I eat them all.
That's great. Again, we have Brandy Molloy joining us. Brandy Molloy on Instagram, Twitter, and the Momhood podcast as well, which I mentioned at the top. This is a great listen for anyone, parents or not. If you're thinking about being a parent, if you are, you share some great stories of your life parenting and also give people a lot of perspective as well. What do you love most about that kind of therapy session you have with your co-host, Orly?
You know, I think that there's such a community there. We've been able to build this really safe space space of vulnerability. Anytime we have a guest on, they always tell us afterwards, they're like, I have never shared some of these stories before. Or, you know, I just felt like I was with my girlfriends at home. And it's such a really a gift that we're able to create that space with each other and with the people that we have on the podcast. But, you know, I could not be the parent that I am. And I couldn't have survived the first year of being a first-time mom without my community of other mamas and other parents. And I talk about just, you know, learning from each other. There's someone to lean on. There's someone to laugh with. It's, you know, someone can really relate to what you're going through, and there's nothing like it. And so if you are listening and you're a parent, especially, but we have so many people that listen, they're like, I'm not a parent at all, but I love what you guys talk about. And I feel like it's preparing me for parenthood. Check out Momhood.
Yeah, it's very relatable. And let's kind of ask about that, because I know that parenting has taken on a whole new level this year with everything that's gone on in our world. And we're heading towards that holiday season. There may or may not be travel involved. Plans may have changed a lot. Like, yourself as a mom, like, kind of what are you, have you kind of game planned for what the holidays are going to look like this year? And like, you know, do you have any sort of tips, or have you kind of talked anything out yet with your husband as to how you're going to approach these holidays as a parent, really?
Yeah, I think if there's anything that a lot of us have learned this year, it's you really have to go with the flow. I mean, our expectations we have to pivot our expectations, because we all paint these pictures in our head of what we think is going to happen. And then there's always a new surprise. And that's really the same thing in parenting. But we're excited to just celebrate at home. I would love to have my family come visit. I'm not sure if they're going to, but if they do, of course, we would get tested and they would get tested to make sure we're, you know, all being safe. But I think that there's just so much control we can have in the four walls that we have in our home. I mean, there's so much joy that we can have. And as a parent, I feel like it's been such a blessing to have children, because we have, you know, a set schedule. There's routine. There's so much fun and laughter, and kids just bring you back to what's important. It really is just those simple moments that kids bring and the silliness that they have. And so every day can be special, you know, like making cookies together, that becomes like a huge memory for us, and being silly, having dance parties, not taking things so seriously, baking together, lots of activities inside. But even if we can't control what's going on in the world, again, you can control what happens in your home and how you approach things. And so that's my biggest tip, is go with the flow and control what you can, and things that you can't control, you have to just let go.
Love that tip as well, too. Take it all in stride. Again, it's the Momhood podcast. Brandy Malloy, one of the co-hosts. And let's talk about the guy who you get through it all with. Obviously, got to admit, I have a little bit of a man crush on your husband, Chris, a.k.a. Mr. Amazing, mostly because of Mr. A Meals. So shout out to Mr. A Meals on Instagram as well, too. But first, I know the story. It took me a little while to figure it out, but tell everyone how your husband got that lovely nickname, Mr. Amazing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think all of us, when we're dating, you know, we give everyone nicknames. So whether it's like, you know, describing how they look or where you met them at. But when I was single, I totally had guys saved as different things in my phone so I could remember who they were.
Yes, of course.
But his nickname is really cool, because when I met him, I just kept telling girls at work at Pop Sugar Studios and my other friends, like, oh my gosh, he's so amazing. We went on our first date and I just kept saying, he is the most amazing man besides my dad. Like, I met this guy, he's so amazing. This is amazing. And finally, we were just like, oh my God, we get it. He's Mr. Amazing. And it just, it's, you know, it stuck. And, you know, we obviously ended up together because he's who I married, but he was the guy where I didn't have to wait to wonder if he was going to call me back, or, you know, if we went on a date, I knew exactly what he was thinking, how he was feeling. And so if you are, you know, wondering how he got his nickname, it's just because he really lives up to it. He's totally Mr. Amazing, Mr. A. And I found someone that loves to cook just as much as me. Yes. So much so that we joke that I do cooking on camera and he's the one that does real life cooking, because he makes dinner most nights of the week. And now he's on this like pizza kick. And so it's all about his doughs and getting his you know, dough ready before work, and it's 24-hour dough. And so, yeah, if you guys follow me on Instagram, you'll see that every Friday night we do Pizza Fridays, and I never know what to expect because he's always testing out a new dough or new toppings or whatever concoction he has up his sleeve.
Yes, and your Pizza Fridays have actually inspired a couple of Pizza Saturdays with myself and my wife after I see the stories on Instagram. So makes complete sense. Well, what's been a good Mr. A creation most recently that he's made, whether it's on the grill or not? He's got a big playbook, but what's he made recently?
We used to be all about the Big Green Egg because he was smoking tons of meats during the summer and last year, and now it's about pizza. So last Friday, he made this pan-style pizza, so super thick, big crust. It had this nice, crispy exterior, and then it was just like doughy and airy on the inside. And on top, it was a blend of brie and pecorino cheese. So it had this really cool, like, comforting saltiness from the pecorino, but then the brie kind of gives it this like sour, gooey, melt in your mouth cheese. And then he had caramelized onions and mushrooms. So it had this like meaty umami flavor from the mushrooms, but then the caramelized onions were just super sweet, delicate. They had melted in with the cheese. And I'm telling you, like, it tasted so good. Like, it hit every mark of what you want a meal to taste like. And then you're like, oh wait, this is pizza? Like, my mind was blown. Oh, and I forgot the best part that kind of like married it together was he did this homemade sauce, this white sauce with garlic and cream and cheese and milk. And yeah, it was delicious. I feel like I'm like going all out food porn right now, but it was so good.
Yeah, we're here for all of it. Just described like a pro too. I appreciate that. Yes. I'm going to have to try and recreate that pizza. Shout out to Mr. A and his meals. And then we have to talk about also cooking with your kids as well too. Just, I've seen you do some things with your daughter as well in the kitchen. Just first off, before we get to what she's made, talk about kind of, you know, how you like to incorporate cooking with your kids and the importance of what that's teaching them at a young age.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of times as parents or as adults, we don't give children and young people enough credit for what they're capable of. And you don't know what your kid can do unless you let them try. And, you know, that's something that I strongly encourage on Instagram is like, let your kids try, let them make a mess, but teach them, because once they can, they should. And so my daughter Millie has been in the kitchen with me since she was a baby. I'm talking like she was in the carrier and I would let her do transfer work, you know, let her transfer one thing to the other, or let her pour the blueberries into the batter, let her stir, let her turn on and off the KitchenAid. And so now, at just turned 3 years old, she's in her toddler stool. She knows how to cut vegetables. She will help me measure things out, dump and pour. And, you know, sometimes we make a mess, but sometimes she's just being so careful because she's so engaged and she loves doing it. So I think that we just don't give our kids enough credit for what they're capable of. And she has become quite a little sous chef. Obviously, it takes a little more patience, but I am so impressed every time I just let her do it, because she's watching me and she's absorbing everything that I'm doing. And, you know, she's such an autonomous kid and she has so much independence. And so she knows where to get the things, to do the things. And so she makes her own avocado toast. She can, you know, crack the egg, she can flip the egg. And, I'm so proud of her. And I think that that's the first step, is just letting her get into the kitchen and do what she can.
Yeah. This is no exaggeration there too. I've seen it. And I've seen her do it live on Instagram too. So it's pretty impressive to see Millie in the kitchen. And for all of my friends who I know just had babies in the last few years, they're listening to this with some really wide open eyes, thinking of what they can do, getting their kids in the kitchen to help them out a little bit. So I appreciate that tip.
It makes your life easier. Like, once you get your kid to a point where they can do all the things, so, you know, get the toddler stool so they can reach the counter, or, you know, we have like a drawer in the fridge that she's allowed to get her snacks herself or grab certain ingredients. So they're basic things, you know, oatmeal. She knows how to make the oatmeal and she's 3 years old. She knows how to pour the oatmeal, add the milk, put it in the microwave. If I'm there, we put it on the stovetop and add all the toppings. So yeah, I mean, this is how it is. And what's funny is all of our parents were, you know, taking care of their siblings when they were, you know, 5 years old back in the day. So
yes.
I think there's something to be said about just letting your child learn how to do it at a young age. It'll make your life easier.
Love that. Great family to follow again. on Brandy Malloy, Instagram, Twitter, all that good stuff. Let's get into some quick hits and some fall holiday related questions. First off, I know you posted the other day, you're not a huge pumpkin spice fan. We talk a lot of pumpkin spice on this podcast. I was drinking it as soon as mid-August because I'm just desperate to get through the seasons to the holidays now. But you said you have an alternative drink at Starbucks that's not pumpkin spice that could be good for the seasonal drink lovers. What is it?
Totally. If you are so over pumpkin spice, next time you go to Starbucks, and you know, you can do this iced or hot, but order a chai latte. I like to have mine with almond milk, and then ask for pumpkin cold cream. So it's part of their like pumpkin cold brew. There's like this foam that they put on top, but you can actually get that added to any drink you want. So it's a pumpkin sweet cold cream. Some Starbucks call them like a pumpkin cold foam. And it basically is like this amazing pumpkin spice whipped cream that you can add to any beverage. And what I love is it just gives you the right amount of pumpkin spice, and the chai, even if you're not into chai, give it a try because it adds this really cool, comforting, spicy flavor. Here in California, it's still in the 70s and 80s. So I get mine iced, and then I just like swirl that cold sweet cream in, and it is so lovely. It's like it's almost like a secret menu item because not a lot of people are talking about it. So if you're listening, you're like ahead of the trend right now.
Yep, secret's out. I'm gonna try it and I'll report back to you on it. So I'll let you know how I feel about that. So that covers Halloween, and then obviously we're looking towards Thanksgiving. I'm already putting notes in my phone for my Thanksgiving menu. I like to switch up the theme separately each year, but what always happens is the turkey. So I'm curious, do you have kind of like different ways you like to do the turkey, or any kind of set in stone turkey you like to do, and any special tips or add-ons to help make it a great Thanksgiving meal?
Oh yeah. Well, Alex, if you follow me on Instagram, you know my love for citrus. So
yes.
Do not underestimate the power of citrus, whether you guys are using the zest of a lemon or the zest of navel oranges. I work a lot with Sunkist Citrus, and so I've created some really cool recipes around this. So you can check those out by going to sunkist.com/recipes. But for me, like, you have to just get the flavor on the inside of the bird and on the outside. So incorporate zest into your sugar and your butter mix. Sure. Like whatever you guys are already doing with your turkey. And a lot of people keep it simple, just butter and salt and a little bit of herbs like rosemary and thyme. Add in citrus. So add in the zest to those dry rubs. Or if you're doing something wet, add some orange juice or add some fresh squeezed lemon juice, because it really just wakes up the bird. I think, you know, citrus is such a great acid. It's almost a like electricity through a dish. And so if you're putting, you know, fresh cut lemons or oranges inside the bird, squeeze it on top, or when you're done, before you serve it, use that as like a finishing sauce. Whatever you're already doing, your gravies, your butter sauces, add a little bit of citrus. And I'm telling you, it is going to wake that bird up. It's going to just like give that little something to the turkey that everyone's kind of wanting. And it also will ensure that even if you overcooked your bird, which a lot of people tend to do, stop doing that. Number one, get a meat thermometer.
Yes.
And take your bird out and let it rest. But if it needs a little something, always have a bowl of citrus in your kitchen because you can do so much with it.
Nice. I love that. I've tried lemon, but I have not tried orange. That's going to be my new step this year. I'll report back.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. Shout out to Sunkist so as well, good. Too. Great partnership you have with them. And then we have to finish with asking for some sort of food trend. You're kind of always at the front of these food trends, and you've been talking about them ever since your Pop Sugar days with Eat This Trend. So in terms of this holiday season, is there something new at the forefront that we should be watching out for, or some food that's going to sell out in the grocery stores, or anything on the horizon that we should look out for this holiday season in terms of food trends?
Well, lately I've been talking about the most underappreciated flavor of this season. It's butterscotch.
Ooh, okay.
It is butterscotch. So I have this amazing recipe on my site. It's your standard sugar cookie, but then instead of using frosting or like a royal icing, you just melt butterscotch morsels and use that as the frosting. And so butterscotch just has this nice caramelly flavor that is familiar because we all have had it, but it never gets enough appreciation. So when it comes to desserts, butterscotch, butterscotch bread puddings, butterscotch in your cookies, butterscotch in your pies, like find ways to incorporate butterscotch, because I do think that that's a flavor that is so good and should really get more attention around the holiday season. And then something recently that is I feel like we saw this trend last year, but I've been seeing it more and more, is that butterfly pea flower tea. A couple years ago, people were talking about it because it's this stuff that you can get on Amazon or at, you know, Whole Foods or other stores. And it's this flower that when you add acid to it, it changes color. And so I've been seeing that a lot lately. People are making like their at-home bobas. They're making like milk teas and stuff and incorporating this butterfly pea flower tea. It's a mouthful, but it's a really earthy flavor. It's not like a flavor that like grabs you. I think what's cool about it is it changes colors. It can go from blue to magenta, and it's a fun party trick. I mean, if you are going to have like a small intimate gathering this Christmas, it's really cool to watch in real life to see it change colors.
Very cool. That's a fun activity for the kids to see as well. A little live science experiment with the food. Really appreciate that. And you just mentioned before we hopped on as well that you're going to be doing lots of stuff for Home and Family on the Hallmark Network too. So it's, again, it's Brandy Malloy, Today Show Food Network. We look forward to seeing you a ton this holiday season. Thank you so much for joining the Course of Life, and really appreciate the tips, and tell Mr. A to keep it up on the grill with the pizza as well.
I will. And guys, thanks so much for being here, and thanks for having me on, Alex.
That interview with Brandy Malloy is thanks to our friends at Desert Fox Golf, the makers of the Phone Caddy. And we know a lot of you have been enjoying a Phone Caddy and have listened to what we've said about it. We love this thing. It is amazing.
And like I say every week, it's perfect time to get the orange for the fall. But you know, there's a little bit something else that we're also offering in addition to their great line as well, too.
Yeah, the Phone Caddy is great because it hooks onto the golf cart right there on the post, holds your phone nice and secure. And we've been saying for a long time, you can save 20% off with the promo code Course of Life. And now our friends at Desert Fox have let us know that this code now also works on their Patriotic line, which is typically excluded from any deal that they do. It's typically always full price.
Yeah, so like if there's a person of service in your life or a veteran or something like that, or just someone patriotic that you want to get this for, they're expanding their line, and we love the variety of the Phone Caddy. So great for all causes.
It really is. And since it's the holiday baking season, that means it's the holiday shopping season. So these are great stocking stuffers. They're not too expensive. Save that 20% with promo code Course of Life. Stick it in your favorite golfer's stocking, and they'll love it. I love putting it on the cart every time I go play. It's very easy. It's great. Head on over to desertfoxgolf.com. Get your Phone Caddy with 20% off. Again, Course of Life is a promo code, desertfoxgolf.com. And we're back. Great chat there with Brandy. I am ready to go for Thanksgiving now.
That was the exact conversation we needed. You know, we've been trying to push the holidays for a while now.
We need them right now. We need them.
Perfect timing for that conversation. Great tips all around for everything coming up this holiday season, whether you're a parent or not, whether you're big in the kitchen or not. A lot of helpful suggestions. And check out her YouTube and all the content she has on BrandyMalloy.com as well for all the tips and recipes she has to share. I love the turkey tip. Shout out to her partnership with Sunkiss as well. I'm going to drizzle a little orange on the turkey. I typically do lemon with the, you know, seasoning and butter and whatnot mix I put on, but I think I'm going to go orange this year. Try it out.
I like it. I like the idea. I think I'll do it too. And we'll let you know how it goes on our social, because that's what we do, because we like food. That's why we have sometimes great people like this who may not be a golfer, but will certainly let us know what we should be doing in the kitchen and how we can make a birdie with dinner.
I love that. Great analogy. What a segue analogy right there.
I know.
You know, it was more like a bogey was my college football picks this past week.
Yeah. You know, let's talk about Tech.
Yeah, let's. Georgia Tech plus 27. So I had them to win by 27 points or less against Clemson.
Mike, how much did they lose by?
The final score was 73-7 Clemson. So clearly they're the number one team, and clearly the worst team in the NFL needs to tank for Trevor Lawrence. This guy is the real deal. I'm done betting against Clemson.
Did Tech, by the way, did they show up to the game? Did they send out like the C squad? What What happened?
You're not going to believe it, but it was 7-7 at one point in the game.
Was it like within the first 2 minutes?
Yes, it was. But that's beside the point. That was ugly. And that was kind of the start of a real rock fight of a day for me. My picks went 4-5. I put my full card of college football picks on Twitter at Course of Life One Weekly. Still hitting over 55% this season. The real game of the year was Georgia versus Alabama. We thought Nick Saban was going to be on the sideline after a Wednesday positive coronavirus test. He then followed it with 3 negatives in a row to get himself on the sideline. Alabama rolled by 17 against what we thought was the best defense in the country in the Georgia Bulldogs. And yet again, I hate to say it, it feels like we're on an Alabama-Clemson crash course for the national championship. I'm already getting those vibes.
That's just, you know, college football every year. It's what
something
happens.
Something's never changed.
Every year. You had a poor showing on Saturday with your picks there, as you said, going 4-5. Let's talk about your NFL showing, because I know you also had a brutal weekend with your NFL faves.
So 1-2 punch, Mike. The Patriots play an early game where they have practiced little in the last 2 weeks because of everything going through their locker room with the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of it before, but it's a thing that's going around. And it kind of affected their ability to get ready for this game. And it showed they were rusty. They played horribly. There was bad coaching decisions from Bill Belichick across the board. Some missed challenges, just a lack of aggression, going for 2 when he didn't need to, not put in a position to win. This team played horribly and lost to the Broncos. And then right after that, Tom Brady, the Bucks, Rob Gronkowski, and Tampa Bay absolutely smothered the Packers. So real great 1-2 punch for New England sports fans right there.
Yeah, it was just unfortunate for you. And then, of course, we had the New York Football Giants and the Washington Football Team.
That's right. Congratulations, sir. Or should I say congratulations? Did you want that? I don't even know at this point.
I don't know. I mean, let's just put it this way. The best team in the NFC East has 2 wins.
Yes, that's right. As we talk right now, that is factually correct. That division is annually a dumpster fire and it's on full display this year. I think 7 wins could just win you the division straight up, 7-9. That's a real fact.
Quite honestly, the Giants could. I don't think they will, but it's anybody's game. Who knows? 7 wins may not even win it. 6 may win it with how bad this division is.
Yeah. So it's tough. We'll, a nice win there, regardless.
We definitely will see what happens. So there is a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel for my Giants there. You know what else was just nice to see this week?
What was that?
It was nice to see the Houston Astros battle back from a 3-game deficit, only not to show up and lose in game 7.
You appreciate that, didn't you?
I really did. And so started our friend Seth Rothman, big friend of the podcast as well. If you're not following him on Twitter, you should be. He was overjoyed with that result.
Yeah, and then the Dodgers on the other side got it done in their game 7 against the Braves, who blew a 3-1 lead. Interesting moment there in the LCSs. So that leaves an interesting moment here because we had Tampa Bay win the hockey, the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. We had the Los Angeles Lakers win the basketball, the NBA. And now the baseball World Series features Tampa Bay and Los Angeles. So this is a rubber match for professional sports, basically.
I'm rooting for the Rays.
I think so too. Yeah, they're in the Red Sox division, but I'm okay with them winning. They kind of deserve a bone. They've been to one World Series, which they lost. That franchise is just traditionally marred in just negativity. They play in a horribly ugly stadium. I think they kind of deserve this one. And it would just be amazing to see the Dodgers continue to be the Buffalo Bills of baseball and just continue to lose in the World Series. I don't mind that storyline.
Well, we'll definitely keep an eye and see what happens. But first, let's hashtag always end with food.
Yeah, we got it at the beginning. We got it in the middle with our conversation with Brandy. And we're hashtag always ending with food, brought to you by our friends at Saucy. Promo code Course of Life to get you $5 off your first delivery. They deliver beer, wine, liquor, snacks to 13 major cities that they operate in. Promo code Course of Life for $5 off. And Mike, I believe that you have something in your person right now that we're going to taste test. We haven't done this in a while.
I don't know if you can ASMR here.
I'm pulling the paper there. Nice work.
I have coming out of this Dunkin' Donuts bag, the Dunkin' Donuts brand new Ghost Pepper Donut.
Ghost Pepper Donut. Okay, so what that's implying is this is going to be some sort of spicy tasting donut. So I want you to do the one bite taste test. One bite, everybody knows the rules. And then give me thoughts on flavor. And really, I want to know spice level, 1 to 10.
So first of all, let me describe the donut. Well, I'll put a picture up as well on our socials so everyone can see what it looks like. It looks like a Dunkin' Donuts donut. It smells like a Dunkin' Donuts donut. It does not smell spicy. It smells very sweet.
Oh.
It's a regular white donut with some sort of pink icing. I think it's supposed to be strawberry. And then there's sprinkles on top. So we're going to see and see what it's like. But it looks like a donut.
Okay, so I'll talk over it. You bite away. ASMR from Michael right here. So a little strawberry with a little heat of the pepper. I feel like could be a decent combo. I'm wondering if you get any sort of flavor from the frosting there. But I'm curious to see what your reaction is. Well, what's our flavor thoughts and then our spice level 1 to 10?
So there's a little strawberry there. The heat is not there in the beginning. It comes in after a couple bites. It's there. It's lingering. It's not very spicy. I think after a couple bites, it would certainly build. It's still there. Still lingering. Back of the throat. It's there. It's not that spicy. It's, you know, I've had the only other kind of odd donut maybe you can say I've had is a bacon donut.
Yeah.
Which is freaking amazing, by the way.
A maple bacon donut. You're speaking my language.
This is okay. This makes me want a not spicy donut.
So you need to get two, is what you're saying. You have to counteract with a follow-up donut, a chaser, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. I can
do that. Okay. And then how 1 to 10 spice level? What are we at? 3, 4, 5?
One bite. We're at like a 3, maybe a 4, maybe a 4.
That's a little bit for vanity, but shout out to Duncan for trying the spicy donut. And then the other thing that we got to get to, because you sent me this map that was on the internet a few days ago. I'm going to pull it up right now. It is a map of, they did some sort of Google search conglomeration and figured out, maybe, we don't really know how verified this is, the favorite Halloween candy in each state. We'll send the map out on socials, but your first thoughts and glances as you look at some of the states that we know well in terms of their favorite candies for Halloween.
Complete and utter crap.
Yeah. There's some BS on there for sure.
So let's call out, first of all, candy corn, nowhere on this. Thank God.
Yeah, that's good. And I will have the occasional piece of candy corn too, but it should not be on this. There's no way that is a mass favorite of any state. So I'm glad not to see that. Right.
Yeah. Let's talk about our home states. Let's talk about my home state of New Hampshire.
Yes. Because
this is probably the most egregious thing I have ever seen if candy corn wasn't an option.
Yeah. New Hampshire's favorite candy. Circus peanuts, Mike. First off, most of the country, I had to come at you for this. I'm glad you just called yourself out. Mm. Most of the country does not even know what a circus peanut is. So please explain. Not at all.
So it's a orange puffed peanut shape piece of styrofoam crap.
It's not good. It is just categorically not good.
If you don't, I mean, what can I compare it to?
Not much, man.
Literal piece of shit.
There's not much to compare to. I don't know how that surfaced. You got a lot of live free or dyers up there that, I don't know. They might've been on something when they took the survey. Okay. That was a weird one.
I never, ever got circus peanuts when I trick-or-treated as a kid in New Hampshire. Well, I don't think any of my friends ever got them. I barely even saw them in the grocery store. So,
And so Massachusetts's favorite candy is something that I did get on Halloween. I remember getting the little square packs of Junior Mints. Now, I like Junior Mints. They're in a famous Seinfeld episode, which you and I both know.
They're chocolatey, they're minty, they're delicious.
I like the flavor. However, it's not quite favorite Halloween candy level. It's maybe cracks the top 5 for me. It's sure top 10. But not a favorite. That was a little bit of a stretch on Massachusetts. And let's talk about the states that we're in now, because they're both the same answer.
Yeah, Starburst, which I've never really been a huge Starburst fan. I mean, I'll eat them, but whatever.
Yeah, same with Texas. There's an Oklahoma joke that I have to make since I live in Austin. No shocker that the favorite candy in Oklahoma is Runts, because OU fans are Runts. That was just easy. It wrote itself. Any others that stuck out to you? I was surprised to see, not too surprised to see hot tamales for New Mexico. Maybe goes along with the culture of the Southwestern spicy flavors or something like that. Mr. Goodbar made an appearance down in Arizona. That's a name I haven't seen in a while.
I'm surprised there wasn't really more Kit Kats and Reese's. Actually, Reese's peanut butter cups only showed up in one state.
Yeah, and I was going to think too, you know, if you just think of the mass of big Halloween candy bags that you're going to buy the next week or two at the grocery store, you always see like Snickers, Milky Way, M&M's, Three Musketeers. Yeah. These are like, while they may not necessarily be everyone's favorite, they're just ubiquitous. They're just candies that are everywhere and they're in all those variety bags. So I'm surprised I didn't see those staples a little bit more.
Now, I will say a lot of the candies that are on here are cheap candies. Airheads, Starburst, Nerds. These are your Dum Dums, Blow Pops. These are cheaper candies to purchase. So yes. I get that. I still don't understand Circus Peanuts, though.
Yeah, that's a weird one. Shout out to Starburst for ruling the South for some reason, though. That's a surprise indeed. That's our Halloween candy debate and review and another great episode of The Course of Life. Thanks again for Brandy Malloy for joining. We have another great guest next week and a whole lot more coming at you. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.